Now, we've heard in recent days about those record numbers of patients on hospital trolleys across the country, with particular issues in University Hospital Limerick, which declared a major internal incident on Monday night due to overcrowding. Well, Liam O'Brien spent 4 days on a trolley in Limerick Hospital after going in on Stephen's Day. And Liam joins me on the line now. Liam, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning. How are you doing?
Today I'm not too good now, but I'm just trying to get it started today. I'm still in kind of limbo since I came out, but I'm still not started.
We'll talk a bit more about that, but I just want to go back now to when this started for you, because Christmas Day and St. Stephen's Night, that's when you first felt unwell. Tell us a bit about why you needed to go into the hospital, to UHL.
Yeah, I do have Crohn's, and I could feel kind of a flare-up maybe happening coming up to Christmas, and then Christmas night it hit pretty bad, and then on Stephen's morning I gave in and I had to call for an ambulance, and I was brought in into UHL on Stephen's morning.
So what happened then when you got to the hospital on Stephen's morning?
So basically they've brought me off in a wheelchair just into where the ambulance people come in, and you're kind of left there, and I was brought into a little room, and then I did an ECG and a blood pressure thing pretty much straight away. And because my heart rate was kind of through the roof, someone saw me and just put me on an IV for fluids and painkillers. And that's because, I was in a lot of pain. I was, because of the Crohn's, I was completely dehydrated and more or less passing out. So I needed fluids pretty much ASAP.
So were you in the wheelchair when that happened, when you got the IV fluids in that little room?
Yeah. So I had no comfort sitting down. I had no real comfort anywhere in any position, but I was like, I have more comfort lying down. So I asked, could I get a trolley? And then after a while, I was on the drip, I got a trolley then.
So you were on the trolley then from when you went in, or a couple of hours after you went in?
Yeah.
And how long were you on that trolley for?
All in all, that one trolley for 4 days. And then, because once I got my IV in the initial place, they moved me across the road or the corridor to just a corridor, basically. And then I was kind of moved around for a couple of hours that first initial day within the same zone. And then I just kind of, I stayed within that corridor then for 4 days.
Will you tell us a little bit about what that was like, Liam?
Yeah, well, the first day was the worst, because there's in that zone, I was put into the corner and then I didn't get to meet anyone for hours. And then that night, we'll say a doctor came and she thought it might just be an infection. And I was like, I've had Crohn's for years and I'm usually on top of it, but flare ups happen. And I was like, I knew I needed steroids and heavier painkillers. So I was kind of moved into a small little room just off that zone. There's kind of four or five of them kept for COVID-y patients. And then because of the pain, my temperature went through the roof as well. But I was only in there for about 10 minutes because someone did test positive, and I was moved out to the counter of the nurse's station then for Stephen's night. And I spent the night at the counter of the nurse's station that first initial night.
And from then, I mean, it sounds from what you're describing that you're on this trolley, you're being moved along a corridor, out of a room, back onto the corridor to the nurse's station. Does that describe what was going on?
Yeah, this is all within 10 to 20 metres of it, of that zone. Everything's inside in that zone. Actual rooms and where there's curtains and stuff, you might have 10, but there could be 40 to 50 patients just around the place, trolleys, and they wouldn't even have trolleys sometimes, on any chair they could get, or wheelchairs or whatever.
And the other patients who were there, what sort of injuries and conditions did you see?
Well, like the first night, I was actually at the desk, so I got to basically meet every single person that came in, and like it was Stephen's night, it was a busy night anyway, so like it was kind of bedlam there for a long time. You can forget about sleep, but you had everything from like broken shoulders to dementia to overdoses to fights to everything, you know.
So you're standing at the nurse's station, so the check-in point really for people coming in, that's where your trolley is for the first night.
Yeah,
So you're witnessing everybody coming through.
they're coming in droves, and like naturally you don't go to A&E unless you're in trouble, and like every single patient is being told you have 13 to 15 hours at least to wait for a doctor, so like frustration builds up, and then they're all just taking it out on the nurses, and there's no one higher to be seen there, you know. So everyone's like, the nurses end up being the face of UHL, like, and they end up just taking everything out on them,
So
you know. And
you're
they're,
saying that you saw some people coming in and firing abuse at the nurses at the nurses' station?
oh yeah, they were getting it left, right, and center. Like, some of them nearly literally reduced to tears, like, and just like, I was just listening to some talking, like, and they were like, they haven't seen anything like that in a long, long time.
So there was obviously a difficulty when it came to the staff being able to cope with the numbers coming through.
Yeah.
And what was your own experience of that? You said earlier about meeting a doctor who thought maybe you had an infection, but did you get much contact with medics over your time?
Like, see, the thing was, the next morning, early the next morning, like, I was moved to behind the nurse's station. There's a little corridor there. And basically, I didn't come in drunk or any of that kind of crack. I just literally came in pain. So it was a quieter kind of a corridor. It's still in the same zone. So I was kind of put there, and that's where I stayed in for another 3 days. And like, basically, what happens is you meet a doctor maybe between 8 and 9 in the morning. But it's a different doctor every day, you know. So like, one thought, yeah, it was a flare up. Then the next, oh yeah, it might be an infection. We'll treat you for that. And then the next one, oh yeah, it probably is. But once you meet that person for a minute or two, you know that you're not going to meet someone else for another 24 hours.
What
So
was
like,
the quiet corridor like? How many people were on the quiet corridor, and what sort of facilities did you have there?
oh, like it was literally just a corridor. There was maybe 10 beds, and like, you do naturally get to kind of know the people around you. Like, there was someone that, like, I'm not going to talk about him personally, but like, he was in that row. You had a broken shoulder, dementia, schizophrenia. You had an overdose. You had respiratory problems. You had me with Crohn's. Like, but you had nothing there. Like, there was one toilet between the whole zone, like 50 to 60 people. There was a toilet in the waiting area, and that was blocked. So like, even the people from the waiting area were trying to get in. Like, we had no showering facilities in that zone between us all. And like, the fella in front of me was on the trolley for 9 days.
Gosh. And for you with Crohn's disease, those conditions are particularly difficult, Liam, I would imagine.
Yeah, like, it's pretty debilitating. Like, when the initial flare, like a flare with Crohn's, is basically like the pain is like you're getting stabbed, but they never take out the knife. But then like, you obviously have your other needs. Like, you could be going 20 to 30 times a day, you know. And I need a toilet for myself, you know. And like, even after 2 days of that, like, I was begging them to let me take a shower somewhere, and they did let me into a different zone, but that was a complete favor, and nobody else got to do that.
Because you had begged over the course of 2 days.
Yeah, I was nearly drawn with the sweat, and I was stuck to the sheet, like.
And the fact that there weren't any facilities there, as you've just described, how did that affect people when it came to the tensions on the ward and how upset people were?
Oh yeah, but sure, everyone was getting frustrated. Like people were leaving. You know, they were just like, nothing's changing here. They were trying to hit for Galway or Cork. You know, like I give my first day that I landed, I give two samples, another three blood samples, an X-ray, and a CT. I didn't hear anything. I heard nothing back from them for about 4 days.
And do you think that's because the staff were under such pressure and they were changing all the time, so you had to give those samples again?
Yeah, well, like it has happened to me before when I was down there, like just samples go missing, or did like every day I was being asked for a new sample. And I was like, look, I gave it yesterday, and they were like, all right, we didn't know that, so this kind of carry on.
Just when it came to the other people there, you had a situation, didn't you, Liam, where someone fell and you and another patient had to pick that person up?
Yeah. So there was two of us just in the corridor, and the fella in the front, he kept passing out, and whenever he'd hit the floor, like we'd have to jump up and pick him up, and we'd put him into the bed. Like he'd be disoriented, he'd get up again, he'd hit the deck. Like this happened a few times, and I was like, someone came down to check my bloods, and I was like, look, he keeps passing out, and they were like, all right, we'll keep an eye on him. And it was only he must have dropped 7 or 8 times. And then,
Onto the floor.
yeah, and then it actually happened in front of someone that was working there, and they were like, "Geez, they moved him up to the in front of them." Then, so like he was out of our hands then.
But before that, you and another person were picking him up off the floor.
Yeah.
Gosh. So you went through 4 nights of that. Was there ever a decision made around whether you needed to be admitted or not?
Yeah, well, like that was the aim from the first day, and like that's what I was led to believe. Like I was told that like I'd be getting a bed as soon as there's one available, and then it was only after the third day that I actually met somebody from the gastro team, like, and she had heard I was there and came down, and I was actually able to have a conversation with her because she knew the crack, so she put me on the steroids straight away, and I had a bit of relief after that, not physical relief, but like just kind of more emotional. And then, so then, the day after, which was yeah, the day after, then I met another person from that team, and they were like, "Look, as the CT looks okay, we need you to go for a procedure next week. You can stay here for the week." And I was like, "This is not happening." Like. So I was like, I just asked him, could I take all the steroids and stuff from home and then come back as an outpatient? And they agreed to that.
And where are you at now? You said at the start that you're not feeling great today. So what's the situation?
Yeah, so basically, I got out a few days ago, and I was supposed to have a follow-up from a nurse from that team. I hadn't heard anything, so I went emailing and ringing. I spent the day on the phone yesterday. Basically, the steroids aren't really working, or the painkillers. The closest emergency appointment I can get with that doctor is Friday week, and like, I've asked like, what do I do until then? And it's like it's tough, really. And they're like, you can go back into A&E if you want. And I'm like, I'm here because of A&E. I'm this far. So basically, I'm kind of waiting to talk to my GP, and I might hit for Galway today. Like that's my today plan.
So you're thinking of going back into an emergency department, just not that one.
Yeah, well, like see, I have VHI, like, and I pay all that every week. So like, I'm just trying to. I'm basically door knocking, looking for help, and like, I just don't know where to go next.
But you think yourself, and you know your own body, you know the symptoms, you think yourself, Liam, that you need to be in hospital, do you?
Yeah, like I'm on heavy steroids and heavy painkillers, and nothing's working, you know. Like I've had this for years, and I'm usually on top of it. Like you can get fairly on top of Crohn's, like, you know.
And you're working,
But
you work with Newark RTÉ, in fact, but you know, you have a fairly normal life most of the time, do you?
yeah, normal. I gym and swim. I work every day. I go out weekends, I play music, I do whatever, you know. I live a normal life, like.
And they said to you that you would need a procedure done this week now, if we're looking at the timeline. So what's happening with that?
I haven't heard anything about that procedure as of yet. I just assume if I am as an outpatient, it'll be an extra week or something, but I haven't heard anything.
And you know that you know, this internal incident was declared on Monday night. I mean, when you think now about what people who are in that position are going through right now, what do you say? I mean, I'm sure you imagine the conditions today as they are on the emergency department in Limerick.
Yeah, like it's absolute chaos below. Like, and like it's like I was obviously frustrated, and I took a picture in the middle of the night and I posted it, but like, there's hundreds and hundreds of people going in there every day, like, and they're obviously just trying to look for help and help and help, and like, it's chaos there every single hour of the day, every day. You know, it's not just because this has cropped up in the last couple of weeks, and there's like, obviously the numbers on trolleys is at the highest it's ever been, but like, this is a major problem and will be for another long time.
Well, Liam, we wish you well. I know you're not well today, but I hope you get some help and that you get it soon. And thank you very much for talking to us.
All right, sounds.
Take care, Liam. That's Liam O'Brien. Now, we have sent a number of queries to the UL Hospitals Group, and they sent us a lengthy statement. And here is some of it. We apologise to this patient and any person who has been experiencing long waits for hospital beds in University Hospital Limerick to see a doctor in the emergency department. They say they've taken a number of actions in response to these issues. They point out that UHL has been managing record high attendances at its ED for a number of months, intensified in recent weeks by a surge in respiratory infections, including COVID, flu and RSV. They say that does not minimise the inconvenience that patients and their loved ones experience during long waits for admission or treatment. The statement says, this is not the level of care we wish to provide, and we apologise to anyone who has been impacted at this time. They continue to advise patients who are seriously ill or injured or worried that their life is in danger to attend the ED, where they will be treated as a priority. For less acutely unwell patients, they ask people to first consider injury units in Ennis, Nina and St John's hospitals, or their family doctors, out-of-hours GP services and pharmacists. And that's the statement we have had from the UL Hospitals Group. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Dr. Yvonne Williams, GP in Shannon, County Clare. Good morning to you, Yvonne, and thank you for joining us on the programme.
Good morning, Claire.
Good morning. We heard from Liam there, still feeling ill today. He says he's prepared to travel to another hospital rather than to go back to UHL for treatment. Knowing what you do about the situation in the hospital, does that surprise you?
No, and I would appeal to anybody who's in the lucky position to have VHI or layer health insurance to please use your insurance and access your healthcare through the private hospitals that have emergency departments, because I suppose that's one thing that will help the other patients and the staff in UHL then, because it will take a certain amount of pressure off the public system. So for people who have insurance and can afford it to use the private healthcare where possible, if they are able to. That's not always possible in an emergency situation. You know, if someone's having a heart attack or a stroke, they you know, it's an ambulance and it's the local public hospital they will access.
Just looking again at the statement that we had from the hospital group saying that people who are seriously ill or injured should go to the ED. But then it's a bit ambiguous, I think, for people trying to make a decision. Indeed, maybe, perhaps, and you'll tell us, for GPs too. I mean, how do you decide on this? For less acutely unwell patients, they ask people first to consider injury units. Now, what does that mean?
So I suppose in layman's terms, if you think you've a broken hip or you've injured your back, your spine, you can't go to a local injuries unit or a head injury. They go to the, you know, the main emergency department. If it's a finger, a toe, an ankle, a knee, an elbow, you can go to the local injuries unit. And the list of conditions that you can attend for are on the HSE website, and they'd be available from your GP receptionist and from Shannon Doc or the K Doc or the out-of-hours service that you would have access to as well. So it's just to have a quick look online, or check in with your primary care provider and you'll be able to access that list.
Okay, just a text in from a listener who was listening to Liam and is feeling absolutely terrified. My dear mum has dementia and I just don't know what we would do if she ended up in hospital at the moment. I wish Liam all the best. Now, is that a common sentiment that you're seeing when you're saying to people, I think maybe we need to send you to the hospital? What's their reaction?
So I suppose we try and avoid sending people to the hospital if at all possible, particularly to the emergency department. And we try and find, you know, alternative routes and alternative ways. Unfortunately, some of the reason people are ending up in A&E is because the outpatient waiting lists are so long. So if somebody could get an urgent outpatient appointment within 4 or 6 weeks, or we had facilities where you could ring up and book somebody in for an urgent appointment 1 to 2 weeks, they may not need to end up in an emergency department. If we think of Liam the week before Christmas, you know, if that sort of facility was there, but there is nothing that we have access to in the Midwest other than a very long outpatient list or the emergency department. 10 years ago, we used to have direct access to an acute surgical unit, a paediatric assessment unit, an ENT day ward, a medical assessment unit, so we could send patients bypassing A&E directly to the specialty that they needed to see. And all of that was taken away from GPs and out of our services. So now everybody has to go in through the emergency department, despite the fact that they are so short-staffed, they don't have enough staff, they don't have enough beds. And the conditions, we have two sets of victims really here in the Midwest. We have the staff in that department in the hospital who are working under horrendous conditions, morale at an all-time low, doing their very best and getting, you know, an awful lot of bad publicity despite their best efforts. And also then you have the patients and their families who are suffering the consequences of how the system is set up here.
So that sounds like a key issue there, Yvonne, as you mentioned, the removal of the acute assessment units. They were available to GPs like yourself. They're gone now. So everyone's being funneled through the same route, emergency.
Everyone's being funneled through the same route. So going back a couple of years, if I had somebody with a very urgent ear condition that perhaps needed IV antibiotics or what we would call microsuction, you could pick up the phone, speak to the ENT registrar, and they would be seen directly on the ward that day or the next day. We had the same option if I saw a child with appendicitis. They could go directly in to a surgical unit after speaking to the registrar or a senior nurse there, and they would be seen there on the day, completely skipping the ED department. We had the same with the medical assessment unit, and we had the same for children with the paediatric assessment unit. And UHL management, you know, a decision was made that all those services were changed, and now the single pathway is through the emergency department. And it's patients who suffer at the end of the day and the emergency department staff, because that's a huge workload that could be funneled, you know, through different pathways. Yeah. And it's done differently in other hospitals.
And just finally, Yvonne, we heard from the Minister for Health last night that he's been told by the HSC that the flu hasn't peaked yet. Is that your own experience?
Yeah, I think traditionally, if we look at the patterns over other years, we can expect the peak in January to February. But I would say 95% of my workload yesterday was respiratory, cough, pneumonia, asthma, flu, COPD, COVID. So I would appeal anyone who hasn't had their flu vaccine, carers, patients, anyone with an underlying condition, children, to please get their vaccine as soon as possible. It's not too late.
Yvonne, thank you very much, and we wish you well with, and no doubt, another heavy workload today. Dr. Yvonne Williams there in Shannon. And as she was saying there, lots of respiratory conditions around, and we're going to be talking about that with our regular GP, Dr. Maura Finn. So we're inviting your questions on sinus issues and respiratory conditions. 51551, if you have any questions for more. That's coming up in the second hour. Coming up next, though, fake police, rats and soiled mattresses, some of the problems experienced by tenants in this country.